Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Discover over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town podcast.
Alzheimer's education and Alzheimer's legislative action, are those areas that Rhode Island has an opportunity to be a national and global leader in?
Absolutely. I think we're at a really great position right now where we have a state government and state agencies that have taken this incredibly seriously.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with Eric Kramer of the Alzheimer's Association's Rhode Island chapter. And a lot of work in terms of legislation, in terms of education and action in Rhode Island this year when it comes to Alzheimer's. It was first brought to my attention, honestly, by the Lieutenant Governor's Office. I attended a presser, I think it was like February, that the package, the Alzheimer's plan, had been proposed by the Lieutenant Governor. And of course, that was based on collaboration with all sorts of players when it comes to addressing this serious public health concern. So very happy to have Eric Kramer of the Alzheimer's Association Rhode Island chapter to take a look at some of the action that's gone on in Rhode Island, which, as you'll hear, was quite apolitical, quite bipartisan, and perhaps a standard which we might be able to apply to other issues. Support for Bartholomew Town comes from Lagunitas Brewing Company, helping to present Elmwood Songwriters Club, a recurring performance series featuring intimate sets by Rhode Island artists from a variety of communities, held at the Bartholomew Town Loft in the Elmwood neighborhood of Providence. Here's hoping you're off to a most excellent start to your Labor Day weekend, and that I can be your companion as you travel or lay around on the beach or whatever it is you're doing. Without further ado, my conversation with the Alzheimer's Association Rhode Island Chapter's Eric Kramer. We were just saying on the way in, it's been a good year. If you can have a good year for a disease or for a public health concern, in terms of on the legislative front, this was a good year for Alzheimer's in Rhode Island. But of course, it's sort of a bifocal process, you know, education and legislation, and then also the disease itself and combating that. So let's go right into your work in Rhode Island, what you're doing in terms of working with the legislature, working with the general public to inform people about Alzheimer's, inform people about Alzheimer's legislative action, and also just in general some of the work you're doing in the community to kind of bring broader attention to the public health concern that Alzheimer's presents.
Absolutely. So with the Alzheimer's Association, in partnership with many stakeholders that certainly include the Lieutenant Governor's Office, as well as the Department of Health and the Office of Healthy Aging here in the state, plus many of the research facilities that we have and some of the other partners that we have across the state, both governmental and private, have really worked to try to update our state plan on Alzheimer's disease and to really look at that as a blueprint on how to address this particular issue. And because there's been a significant increase in individuals that have Alzheimer's disease, there's over 23,000 people here in the state that have it, and it's increasing significantly. And it's becoming obviously a bigger problem as we have a aging community here in Rhode Island. We have a very high percentage of our residents that are of senior age. So it's going to be an immediate issue and a long-term issue that has to be addressed. And really trying to educate not only legislators and state office holders, but also the general public about the resources that are available and about the needs to try to address this, both through trying to increase funding and awareness for research opportunities, but as well as what people can do on a day-to-day basis to be more aware of maybe their loved ones who have it, to try to get them the resources that they need, but also you know, maybe some ways to try to help themselves in regards to if you can, you know, those things that might be able to stem the tide of it, to either prolong it or to stop it. And you know, obviously we've been making great inroads as a nation to try to accomplish those things, which, you know, I certainly could talk about on the research front because there's been a lot that's been done. But you know, I think the state plan as a blueprint to try to address this, both through looking at research opportunities, through brain health messaging to the general public, and then having the Department of Health have a direct office to try to address this and to create programs to try to provide training for healthcare facilities and for physicians and nurses, as well as, you know, looking at data and looking at, you know, where we go from here. And I think that was the first part of it. And passing that resolution to really take that state plan that the Lieutenant Governor championed this year, and really looking at that as your, especially if you're a legislator, looking at that as your guidebook to what legislatively could be done each year to try to address this. And I think the biggest legislative bill that was passed this year was, I'll call it an omnibus bill because it was so comprehensive in nature, was it did create a program within the Department of Health now. That's going to be implemented. And it had particular dates associated with that, with certain tasks that would need to be done. And that would include having a direct office that would be addressing the issues around Alzheimer's and dementia, and then having a volunteer advisory council made up of professionals and other appointed office holders to really look at that data, work with the Department of Health to see how the program is working. And then it would also require training for physicians and nurses on at least an hour of training on dementia and Alzheimer's related issues in regards to patients. And it also would require a Alzheimer's plan for healthcare facilities in this state. And it had also looked at trying to create a protocol for assessment for Alzheimer's disease. So it's pretty comprehensive. And that was a major bill that was passed. And it was its first year of being proposed. And it was a very similar bill that got passed last year in Massachusetts. Ours is different only in very small ways. And it was a really big victory, I think, for you, not only those individuals that have been impacted, but also really trying to address this as a state. And having those two pieces of legislation get passed this year is major. It's truly big in nature, because there's certainly some other pieces of legislation that were passed, but I think those were the two biggest ones by far.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, it seems like it must have been February or March, maybe January, where I was at the State House at a presser, and the Lieutenant Governor's people handed me a booklet with the Alzheimer's plan, at least a draft version. Well, not a draft version, but an early version thereof. And that's what the first thing that came to my mind as well. It's comprehensive, that it's not unusual, but it's ideal in that it involves all stakeholders, it seems, on the governmental side, on the healthcare provider side, and on the public side, and then also, of course, on the research front, which is, I suppose, somewhere between academia and public health as well. But what's the next step forward, I guess, you know, now that you've kind of laid out, you've pulled in many stakeholders in Rhode Island, you've got these solid pieces of legislation through. So is it more about educating the public now, letting them know basically what you're up to here?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest concerns, is really looking at what the legislation is requiring and then how to implement some of that. That could be done through regular activity through the Department of Health, through its regular messaging, through organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, where we can continue to try to provide educational programs for those that have been impacted, and then looking at trying to educate the public in general about, you know, what to look for, the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's disease. And that can go with any age, because there's younger onset Alzheimer's as well, unfortunately. So those individuals that are under that official senior age that get that younger onset of the disease. And it's just knowing what to look for, some of those warning signs, and then, you know, getting the proper assessments that they need, going to their physician, asking questions, encouraging them to talk to their physicians. And of course, educating physicians on the need for them to be asking their patients questions about their cognitive health, because it all it all comes together too. And I think on the research side of things, there's been some really great strides made in, you know, unfortunately not being able to find a cure or a real major treatment yet. But I think looking at how to assess whether somebody has Alzheimer's disease, there's been some excellent research that have been done that has been released this year. It just came out from our international conference that we held earlier in July in Los Angeles, where we are looking at how to look at blood testing and see how we might be able to test for the proteins that make up some of those biomarkers of Alzheimer's disease, that really those tau proteins and the amyloid production, and looking at what because right now it's just a PET scan that's being done, that and that can be very invasive in nature because it's a spinal tap. Sometimes health insurance companies don't cover that, and you know and sometimes it's not available in where you live. So there's some issues around some of that. So it's not always difficult to, it's not always easy to be able to assess if somebody actually has it. But earlier on, if people can get blood tests done, and I think some of those research opportunities that have been coming out, looking at some of that protein production that's in the blood, that might be that telltale sign that you actually somebody has Alzheimer's disease or is, you know, starting to get some of those biomarkers that, you know, that will help you earlier on in your life to be able to plan properly, so that you can, you know, take some actions to be able to help yourself be able to, you know, whatever that may be, whether it's just planning ahead for whether or not you or your loved one has Alzheimer's disease, and you know, the keeping them safe and making sure that you've got that those proper resources available to you if or when it happens, and or to make sure that you start to do some of those activities that might be able to stem the Alzheimer's production. So, you know, that could be that. And again, there's been research done on that as well, looking at stimulating your brain, some of those healthy behaviors that will help you long term. You know, just very simple things, just a proper diet, a heart health, all of those things. You know, stimulating your brain through reading, social engagement, that will help stop some of those that potential of Alzheimer's disease developing in your body. And there's been studies that have shown that it actually does work. It's not the silver bullet to be able to stop Alzheimer's, but it's one way that researchers have found, especially in they looked at women, that it actually, because unfortunately there's been statistics that have shown that women actually do get Alzheimer's at a higher rate than men, but you know, some women that actually they work regular jobs have statistically less cases of Alzheimer's disease than women that haven't. So there's just all of those, you know, various different things that have been done through research, both internationally and here in the United States and in Rhode Island. We've actually been incredible research facilities and opportunities here in the state for clinical testing as well, over at Butler, through over at Rhode Island Hospital, the Memory and Aging Center, as well as at University of Rhode Island. It's amazing. We're right at the epicenter of a lot of the Alzheimer's research being done.
Going back to a point you'd mentioned, what are the 10 signs of, you know, or that you, a person should be concerned that they, or be, you know, at least thoughtful that there's a possibility of Alzheimer's in their life, whether it's them or someone they're close to? What are those 10 signs?
I think a lot of it, if you're looking at some of the classic signs of it, one would be if somebody is exuding those behaviors that are not really part of their regular personality. You know, that could be something along the lines of, you know, they forget how to do very simple tasks, whether it's, you know, they don't remember how to work the microwave, or, you know, if somebody, they don't know where electrical sockets are or what they are. And, you know, just some of those things that, you know, some people might associate with regular aging. There's really, honestly, Alzheimer's disease is not a normal part of aging. There's many individuals that, you know, they will never have some of those cognitive issues. And it's really some of those major things, like people will wander, or they don't remember how to get home, or they don't know how to start their car. You know, those things that are just so functional in nature that we do every day, and then suddenly you don't know how to do it. That could be a major sign. You know, obviously, it could be signs of other things too. That's why it's not necessarily just always the, you know, the absolute sign that you might have dementia or a form of it. But it's just something to look out for. And I think it's also looking at, you know, the changes of just regular behavior, whether it's your personality. So it's somebody that, you know, might have a particular, you know, might be mild mannered, and then they're really getting irritable. And, you know, I think that's another potential sign of it too. If you're looking looking at in conjunction with some of these other changes as well. Another warning sign could be, you know, they're doing behaviors that are risky and they never were doing that. You know, they start smoking suddenly or, you know, other things, you know, they're being a little bit more critical in nature that, you know, you might be concerned about. And I think everybody needs to look out for some of those things too. You know, that goes for all of us. I mean, at any age. And I think it's not just you looking at, now that I'm 65, now I got to worry about it. I think everybody should always be really being very cognizant of this stuff. I mean, it's important. And I think we take it for granted because we don't think about it. But, I think people go day to day not thinking that they're going to get Alzheimer's disease or dementia, but it's incredibly prevalent in our society. And, you know, there's a whole host of factors that could be the cause of it. I mean, it could be environmental. It could be genetic. I mean, it could be a whole combination of a lot of different things. And I think the best thing that we can do as a society is not only try to be as healthy as we can and to stimulate ourselves in many different ways, both through physical activity and through regular brain activity and social engagement with people, but also, keeping our bodies in good order and being aware about it and educating our loved ones about it, asking them questions, asking them about, how they're doing with things. You know, if somebody forgets something, have a conversation with them, don't ignore it. Really have those, heart to heart conversations. But I mean, there's certainly resources available that the Alzheimer's Association, as well as other organizations, can provide for people to kind of help some of those conversations because they can be difficult.
Absolutely. You'd mentioned that the plan, the Rhode Island plan, a lot of it was taken from, or at least a lot of the ideas came from Massachusetts. That's not something that's totally unusual around these parts for any topic. But given some of the advocacy work that you're doing with your organization, the lieutenant governor and other players inside the state house, and just the general infrastructure of healthcare that's in Rhode Island, it doesn't seem like stakeholders necessarily communicate or work together to the maximum effort all of the time. But is Alzheimer's research, Alzheimer's education, and Alzheimer's legislative action, are those areas that Rhode Island has an opportunity to be a national and global leader in?
Absolutely. I think we're at a really great position right now where we have a state government and state agencies that have taken this incredibly seriously. And, you know, they're really trying to push forward with being able to address this issue. And not every state has that opportunity right now. So we're really at the forefront of this battle against this disease. And I think that goes with trying to build those relationships and those connections with all the stakeholders involved, both through state government and through the private entities that we have. And we have incredible hospitals here that have centers where they do research and they have those memory and aging programs and clinical trials that they're working with patients on. It goes with to really talking about those opportunities with people. So let them know that they can participate and what that entails. And the more that we talk about that, whether it's through traditional classic media messaging and or just regular conversations we have on a daily basis or sharing some of that information through other alternative channels, whether it's social media, through just regular discussions that we have with our friends and family, I think it goes a long way. And we're a small state, and I think we're a state that, because we're small, we have some of those opportunities to have that kind of close-knit connection with all of our state agencies and partners here. And I think looking at federal funding and how that correlates to some of the activities that we're doing here. And I'll give a great example. If there's through the BOLD Act, which was passed federally at the very end of 2018 by Congress, that provides infrastructure funding to address Alzheimer's disease. Once that money is appropriated and implemented and being able to funnel down to the states to be able to utilize, we can, as a state, be able to take some of that money and be able to utilize that with the Department of Health with its new program. So there's that synergy that goes with both federal legislation and state legislation. And that also means that we have to work with our Congress members as well to talk about what we're doing on a daily basis and what our goals are, and then see how that correlates with what they're trying to accomplish, and then working together. And we have a fantastic relationship, and we should, with our members of Congress. And they've taken a really big position that they are for Alzheimer's disease funding, research, and other programs to be able to stem this, including the younger Onset Alzheimer's Act, which is right now in Congress right now. And that bill would be able to open up opportunities for individuals that have been diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's under the age of 65 to get the same benefits that individuals that already under the Older Americans Act, they'll be able to, those benefits that they're already able to get. Because they'd then be designated as individuals that have younger onset, so they will need those same services. There was a bill that was proposed this year here in Rhode Island that was incredibly similar in its scope, but that funding from that federal act would be able to, if it was passed, would be able to make that money available here in the state to be able to utilize. So I think looking at both federal legislation and state legislation going forward, which was done this year as well, with if you're looking at BOLD being an infrastructure federal act, and then looking at the Department of Health bill that was passed this year in the state to address Alzheimer's, there's a really big connection there. So there's a cause and effect. We can utilize some of that. So having some of those close connections with our state and federal legislators is extremely important. And we've been able to make some really great strides in being able to build those connections and trying to get those conversations ongoing all the time. And I think Rhode Island is really lucky that we have that close relationship through all of our state legislators and, you know, and it's, you know, making them aware too about what they can do and maybe taking it seriously. They don't have to necessarily have a connection to the disease. They don't have to have a loved one or somebody that's close to them to have it, to make them aware and understand how important this issue is, because it affects so many people. It's one of those diseases, and, you know, comparing diseases is certainly something that, you know, we would never do. It's just one of the facts around Alzheimer's disease that there is no treatment or cure, and that's obviously really incredibly problematic, and something that is very, very concerning long term that we have to try to address as a country and as a nation, and within our healthcare community. But I think just even those individuals that have been impacted by Alzheimer's disease, you know, being able to provide those resources for them ongoing, you know, so it's not always just about research. It could be programs that are legislated or coordinated through local cities and towns to be able to make life just a little bit easier for them, and including their caregivers as well. And I think they go unnoticed and untalked about sometimes, because unfortunately statistics have shown that a lot of the caregivers, especially the personal caregivers, so the loved ones that are taking care of somebody who has Alzheimer's, many times they die before their loved one who has the disease. And you know, this, and that could be a whole host of factors, but it could just be this, a lot of it is stress as well. And they need that respite in being able to, you know, take some time to be able to take care of themselves. And that's part of the awareness piece as well, as being able to make sure that the caregivers are taken care of.
If I had a producer or an intern right now, I'd ask them to pull up the voting record from and see, you know, just to get the names. But I'll ask you, you know, you had universal support on this. So, I mean, it's tough to say bipartisan, but multifactional support, far left, quote unquote, to across the right. I mean, did Mike Chippendale and, you know, Moira Walsh each support this?
Absolutely. Unanimous.
Got it.
So all the bills were, there were no votes against it. This was a bill that everybody was for, because it affects so many people. And I think our General Assembly here, they really do understand the scope of the problem. Now, I think obviously going forward, when they're talking about legislative actions, now that this bill has passed, now it goes on some of those stakeholders like the Department of Health to implement it. But going forward, what other legislation could be passed? And I think going back to the state plan, looking at some of those pieces in there that were not necessarily in that omnibus Department of Health bill, looking at how maybe they could look at, you know, legislating campaigns around messaging around Alzheimer's and brain health, maybe looking at some other pieces that could be done that, you know, were long-term issues that could be addressed. Maybe looking at some of those bills that were proposed this year that did not pass, like the access to benefits for those with early onset Alzheimer's.
Right. When you start to spend more money, I guess it becomes a matter of, like all budgets, priorities, right? So it's just shifting the priorities of the more fiscally conservative minded people in all levels, in all branches of government, really. And trying to convince them that this is an apolitical issue, and that, you know, regardless of fiscal woes or any other constraints, that it's something that's got to be, you know, it's a public health crisis almost, essentially? Is that how you're positioning it now?
100%. I mean, yeah. It's if you're looking at it even from a fiscal standpoint, I mean, it's $290 billion worth of money that people are losing on this. I mean, this it's a as a state and as a federal government, I mean, we're spending a lot of money on Alzheimer's disease and dementia in regards to some of those programs through health, and it's going to get bigger. And I think we need to look at how we can address this as a nation to be able to stem some of that tide, both, you know, as a government and for private citizens that are being affected, because, you know, it's an extremely expensive disease, and it's going to become an even bigger problem long term. And I think that's the other side of it too that we don't talk about. I mean, obviously that's, you know, that's money, but then if you're talking about, you know, some people have to stop working to be able to take care of their loved one, and now they've lost wages. That could be an issue. I mean, obviously, it's a big problem. It's going to get worse. So I think making more legislators and even city and state officials and town officials aware of this and what they can do, you know, through programs at their senior centers and, you know, and having community forums and people talk with their local officials about some of these issues to, you know, what they can do potentially, and even first responders, you know, what they can look out for to be able to help this. You know, having include more programs for those people that wander, you know, so to have a even improve even more and enhance the system of you know, making more people aware of people that have been lost. And, you know, I think just more awareness in general, I think we'll be able to do that, not only for state legislators, but just regular everyday people like you and me. The more that we know and are prepared, the better we are once or if this disease does touch our lives in some way.
As always, thanks for joining in on the Bartholomew Town podcast. I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new episode. Have a spectacular Labor Day weekend, and we'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.